Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Kay Patuk, together with my co-host, Varad Dawati. Hello, Varad, and hello to you, the listener.
Hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener. We are calling today's show Affordable Homes and Our Common Home because it is about homes in two different senses. To start with, we'll be hearing about an organization called Bike to Build, which organizes cross-country bike trips focused on building affordable housing in collaboration with the organization Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, Bike to Build came through Ames on July the 6th, and Dan DeGeest of Ames Bicycle Coalition will be telling us more about that in just a second. And the second half of today's show will focus on the Pope's encyclical on the environment, which is called Laudato Si, on the care of our common home. So we'll be concentrating on two different kinds of homes today. On the subject of our common home, this earth, I spoke to priests from the two Catholic parishes in Ames about Pope Francis' important encyclical on the environment. And we also spoke about it with two members of these congregations. So those interviews will be coming up later in the show.
But right now, let's hear from Dan DeGeest, who is with us in the studio. Because it's third Monday of the month, he is due to give us his monthly report from the Ames Bicycle Coalition. Welcome back to Local Talk, Dan.
Thanks, Parad. Thanks, Kay.
So, I believe you have got a pre-recorded segment for us, but before we start, is there anything you want to tell us about Bike to Build?
Sure. Thanks, Parad. I'd like to just start out, this is a big week for bicycling in Iowa with yesterday's start of RagBri, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa. This annual ride across Iowa was started in 1973 as a friendly challenge between friends and Des Moines Register employees John Carras, an avid bicyclist, and Don Call, a featured columnist and bicycling enthusiast. After some hasty planning, they invited the public to join them, and around 300 riders left Sioux City for a six-day, several-hundred-mile ride to Davenport. The ride has grown in popularity every year since, now attracting well over 10,000 riders, and internationally recognized as one of the premier bicycling events available anywhere. This year's ride, the 43rd, again finds riders biking from Sioux City to Davenport, with an overnight stops in Storm Lake, Fort Dodge, Eldora, Cedar Falls, Hiawatha, and Coralville. But today I'd like to tell you about another group of cyclists biking even further and with an entirely different mission. For this group, a bike ride across Iowa is just one leg of a cross-country route that will have them crossing dozens of states as they travel from the East Coast all the way to Washington State. This group is Bike and Build, and every summer a team of around 30 cyclists bike across the U.S., making stops in various towns along the way where they volunteer with Habitat for Humanity and assist in community builds of affordable housing for local residents. The team spends 1 to 2 days at each Habitat build doing foundations, siding, roofing, and everything in between. The builds are planned ahead of time, and Habitat coordinators find the best jobs to take advantage of 30 young, strong, and gung-ho volunteers. After a day or two of service, the riders get on their bikes, and they pedal 50, 60, or more miles per day to their next location, and repeat the entire process until they reach the West Coast. This year's group and route came through Ames on July 6th and 7th, as you mentioned. The team worked for 2 days on a local Habitat build, which should be ready for the deserving family of three sometime in August if things go as planned. They started in Providence, Rhode Island, and when they reach their destination in Washington, they will have pedaled 3,922 miles, or nearly 8 RagBri rides, and assisted with 16 Habitat builds along the way. To date, they've also raised over $140,000 in donations.
Wow.
Ames Bicycle Coalition hosted a picnic for the team during their stopover in Ames at Brookside Park. ABC members donated and prepared food for the riders, coordinators, and local Habitat for Humanity representatives. Music was provided by a local band, the Vinyl Vagabonds, and riders had a great time eating, dancing, and relaxing after a long day of hard work on the local Habitat projects. I had a chance to speak with two of the riders about the program and their experience so far on the ride. Let's hear from them now. So I'm here with Isaac and Becca. They're two of the riders on Bike to Build with Habitat for Humanity. Isaac, why don't you start? Why don't you tell us who you are, where you're from, and what your role is with Bike to Build project.
All right. My name is Isaac Martin. I'm originally from Washington State. Grew up there. I've been living in Oregon the past few years. I joined Bike and Build because I was part of AmeriCorps in Triple C last year, and I was serving down in the Southeast U.S. and doing a lot of community service work down there. And I heard about Bike and Build. They came to our campus and gave a presentation, and I was looking for some leadership experience, so I decided that sounded like a neat thing to do and gained some experience that way. And I always wanted to do some more road biking and never really found a way to get into it, and so this seemed like a really perfect way to do that and get my feet wet with it and just jump right in. And I actually did some work with Habitat for Humanity down in the South last year and really enjoyed it. I like the affordable housing cause and wanted to expand upon that. And so having that coincide with Bike and Build was just kind of a match made in heaven for my experience.
Great. So were you a big cyclist before this, or did you have to gear up and learn how to cycle 50, 60, 70 miles a day? And is that a whole new experience for you, or something you've done before?
I was not a cyclist before this. I had done some mountain biking before this, and that was pretty much it. I had never been on a road bike, and so how Bike and Build works is that we all raise $4,500 for affordable housing, and once we raise $1,000, Bike and Build sends us a bike. And so we're supposed to pledge 500 miles before starting the trip to get ourselves conditioned and used to our bikes. And so that's how I did that, was to just jump on and start pedaling. And one thing led to another and arrived in Providence, and now we're here.
Great. So what's the longest day you've done so far, of number of miles?
We have done a couple century rides so far, real close to them. I clocked on my century 101 miles is the farthest that I've done so far.
Now, what's a typical schedule? You're bicycling a couple days a week and working a couple days a week, or is it every other day, or how does that work out?
Yeah, so we have 16 builds along our route. We're Providence to Seattle. There's 8 trips that happen each summer, and we had a build day in Providence starting out, and then we've had, I think this was our 7th build today here in Ames, and so we typically bike anywhere from just one day to like 6 days in a row biking, and then we have 3 days off. So we had a day off in Columbus, Ohio, and that was a lot of fun. Got to check out the city, and so now we're building here in Ames today. It was a lot of fun. We worked with the Restore, worked at the Restore and organized and priced some things, and then the other half of our group worked over at the Roosevelt Rehab House, and Becca can touch on that later, what they did there, but I hear that was some fun too. And we'll be moving on to Carroll tomorrow. We'll be heading out, and then we're actually doing another build day in Carroll. So it can vary between how long we have in between days of building and biking.
Would you say Iowa's about the halfway point, or how far along on the journey are you?
Yeah, it's really close to halfway. I looked, I think we're about 1,700 miles in of 3,900 total. So and geologically it looks like right about where we should be halfway.
Great. So because I'm kind of interested in sort of the biking angle as well as the Habitat for Humanity part, how has the trip been so far in terms of bicycling on the nation's highways? And are you sticking to a lot of trails? Have you been highway riding? Is it a combination? And tell me if you've had any crazy experiences so far out there on the roads.
We've done a lot of little bit of everything. We started out, we hit a lot of the back roads going down through the New England area, and like all through those hills, Connecticut hills, and we stayed to some back roads and some back highways, and then coming into Ohio, there was a lot of bike trails there. We stuck to a lot of those, did like 60 miles a day just on bike trails alone. It was a lot of fun, and so we try and hit those as much as we can, but then like through some of the Iowa roads, we're just hitting the backcountry roads. We have hit some gravel, and we'll be hitting more gravel as we move on, but sometimes you just have to take what you can get, and we don't like to go on real busy highways, so we'll take the gravel over getting pushed off the road by vehicles any day.
Sure. So are you finding lodging in each town you come to? Has that been arranged, or are you doing some camping along the way, or how does that portion work?
We usually stay at churches and community centers. We set up our overnights pre-trip, and it's up to us. There's 4 leaders on our team of 29, and it's up to us to plan out those overnights and contact the churches ahead of time. And we're staying at First Christian Church right here in Ames for these couple nights, and then we do have a couple camping days. We stayed in Roscoe one night already, camped out, and just got rained out. We woke up in some puddles in our tents. But other than that, we're having a couple other camping days in Washington when we start rolling up farther west. That'll be a lot of fun.
Great. Do you have a sport vehicle, or do you have several sport vehicles, or how are you doing that portion?
We do have a 15-passenger van, and it's pulling a trailer that has all of our luggage in it, so we're all allowed a good-sized little duffel bag that we can put all of our personal belongings in, so we don't have to carry everything with us on our bikes. Makes it a lot easier for everybody. and it's up to us four leaders to drive the van. We rotate each day, so there's not always someone driving it. Everybody's a part of the experience in the end.
Great.
I see you're getting a nice bicycle tan.
Yeah, you like that.
Yeah, looking good.
Yep.
All right, Isaac, thanks. Let's talk to Becca a little bit.
Thank you.
Becca, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what your experience on Bike to Build has been so far.
Sure. My name's Becca. I'm from Massachusetts originally. I grew up there. I went to college in Maine, and I just finished up a graduate degree in exercise and sports science in Western Massachusetts. And I initially heard about Bike and Build, I think, sometime shortly after high school. One of my high school rowing teammates did a Bike and Build trip, and I remember hearing about it. At that point, I had only ever ridden a mountain bike, so the notion of biking cross-country seemed pretty crazy to me. But fast forward about 8 years, and here I am doing Bike and Build. I think talking to her planted the seed of Bike and Build in my mind, and I looked it up a year ago, and decided it was something I really wanted to do. As a former rower, biking is really a natural progression. It's a similar sport in that you're wearing spandex and you're sitting down, but you're still working really hard. So I really enjoy biking because of that. And Bike and Build seemed like a perfect venue for combining kind of my interest in cycling as well as community activism and outreach, as well as peer leadership as well. Isaac and I are both route leaders on this trip, so it's been a fun opportunity to work with this group and kind of guide them on this journey.
So tell me a few of the projects that you've done so far and as part of the Build portion. What have been some of the types of houses or types of projects you guys have been working on so far?
We work on just about anything and everything that Habitat can put us to work at. So we've set up the Build days ahead of time, and they know we're coming, so they set aside projects that can use the human power of 30 people in one day. So today in Ames, we had, like Isaac said, about half of us were at the Restore, and then I was with the other half of the group at the Rebuild, and we were stripping down wallpaper, and we were moving things out of a basement. We would have been doing more painting, but it was a little bit wet outside, so we were just doing a bunch of stuff on the inside of the house to get it ready for some remodeling. So we were able to take wallpaper off of walls, which was painstaking but also really fun. I know at least one of us found out, who is working on her PhD in psychology right now, she said that stripping wallpaper is one of her new passions in life. So we did that today. In the past, we've also, back in Bloomington, Illinois, we in one day were able to put an entire roof on a house, or just the trusses and the boards. What are those boards called? Sheeting. So we were able to get that done, as well as raise some walls on an adjacent house. And they said that without our group of 30 people there, that would have taken them at least 3 weeks to get that, just the roof up on that one house. So we did that. That was really exciting. We've also done some flooring, some painting, some landscaping. We'll do just about anything. It's a really great opportunity for us to learn construction skills. I am a lot better with a hammer and nails than I've ever imagined myself to be. And I know how to use a skill saw now, know how to put measure things and use a speed square. So that's a pretty fun opportunity as well. It's an opportunity for us to gain some handy skills that we can use later on in life.
So after doing all that hard work and all that manual labor, how hard is it to get up in the morning and get on your bike and do a 60 to 100 mile bike ride to the next location?
I don't know. I'm speaking for myself, but I have yet to wake up and not be excited about what I get to do that day, whether it's a Build day or a riding day or a day that I'm driving the van. I wake up every morning on Bike and Build just fully stoked on what we're doing. And sometimes, you know, we've got saddle sores where our legs feel like lead from maybe forgetting to stretch or being too tired to stretch when we rolled in the previous day. Maybe our jerseys are kind of sweaty and smelly from before, but we all kind of roll out of bed, wake up at our own pace, and are ready to go. We have great breakfasts, and I'm loving every moment of it, and the 60 to 100 mile days are just kind of, it's great. It's great to be able to be on a bike all day and have that be what you're doing. It's a really awesome opportunity. People keep on thanking us for doing what we're doing this summer, and I just can't help but be like, no, thank you for giving us this opportunity to see the country and contribute something and learn things ourselves.
So what's the most beautiful thing you've seen so far when you've been on your bike? Do you have a particular piece of the country so far that you found particularly lovely, or at a moment or an experience on the bike ride so far that is going to stick with you for the rest of your life?
Well, most recent in my memory was just our ride from Clinton, Iowa to, were you going to Marshalltown? No. Yes? No.
Lisbon.
Clinton to, yeah, Mount Vernon, Lisbon area. I hadn't been expecting Iowa to be so beautiful with the rolling hills and just the pastoral landscape, the windmills, the wind turbines off in the distance. So I kind of dubbed Iowa in my mind to be Iowow, which is really stupid. So that's been breathtaking. Aside from that, we've had some really awesome, in Connecticut, we had some great downhills through the forest that opened up into a reservoir. I forget what that reservoir was called. So green trees, waterfalls, reservoirs, some cool hillsides in the Catskills, and the, you know, the corn in Illinois was a little bit monotonous at times, but the wind turbines along there were somewhat beautiful in their own way. Yeah, and we've had our fair share of rainy days along this route as well, but that just kind of, you feel even more hardcore to be riding through the rain and showing up with mud all in your face. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the West holds.
How many flat tires so far?
Oh, for our whole group or for me personally?
Well, for you or personally and for the group.
Well, I've been lucky to only have one so far. I probably have a few more coming up, though. I noticed a slash in my tire. I ride gator skins. For our group, I know we have a few individuals who have hit double digits on their flats. I would approximate we've had at least 70, maybe 80. Yeah, we're keeping a tally in the back of our van, actually. We have a little chalkboard doors, so there's people are putting tick marks next to their name to see how many flats they've gotten. One person was pretty gung-ho about trying to ride his stock tires that he got with his bike all the way across the country, and I think he's given up on that after 3 or 4 flats on one day on gravel.
Okay. Well, you guys are probably getting pretty hungry. We should let you go eat. Just real quick, what are your plans for after the summer's adventure is over? What will you be doing next year?
Ooh, I have no firm plans as of yet. I'm probably going to be back in New Hampshire working in some extent in the White Mountain National Forest with the huts on the Appalachian Trail. So if you're there, look me up.
Awesome. And how about you, Isaac?
Well, before coming to Bike and Build, I was actually had a position with Youth Build in Central Oregon. I was one of their assistant construction skills trainers. And so upon coming into that position, I said, on the one condition, that I get to do Bike and Build this summer. And they said, okay, go for it. So I'll be going back and finishing up my AmeriCorps service with them once I return home to Central Oregon.
Fantastic. You guys are awesome individuals. Thanks for talking with me. That was Becca and Isaac with Bike to Build and the Habitat for Humanity.
Well, thanks for that report, Dan. Those are some idealistic and energetic young people. And they have to raise their own money, too.
They raise their own money. They're fairly self-supported, just the van and a few things following them along, and a long trek across country doing good stuff.
Yeah, well, that's terrific. Well, we've been talking to Dan DeGeest of the Ames Bicycle Coalition. Dan's reports are a regular feature of Local Talk on the third Monday of the month. And now, to introduce the subject of our common home and the Pope's encyclical about it, let's listen to a brief section of the Missa Gaia, or Earth Mass, by Paul Winter. This piece is called For the Beauty of the Earth.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. You've just been listening to For the Beauty of the Earth from the Missa Gaia, or Earth Mass, by Paul Winter. We thought this beautiful contemporary music would be an especially appropriate introduction to our discussion with some of the Catholic clergy and parishioners in Ames on the subject of the Pope's encyclical on our environment, which is called Laudato Si, on the care of our common home. We'll be playing another section of this Earth Mass later in the show, so before we get into discussion, I'd like to tell you a bit about this work. Paul Winter's Mass is performed every year in New York City's Episcopal Cathedral of St. John the Divine, the world's largest Gothic-style cathedral. The music itself includes the voices of humpback whales and timber wolves, and the performance in the cathedral includes more than a dozen choirs, two dance companies, African drummers, and a procession of animals, including an elephant and a hive of bees, and everything in between, camels and whatnot, down the two-block-long nave of the cathedral. The occasion is always a celebration of the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, and this year it'll be held on October the 4th. And before we get into the interviews with the clergy and parishioners about the Pope's encyclical, we've got just a bit of history for you about the two Catholic churches here in Ames. Virad, why don't you start by telling us what you found out about the history of the oldest Catholic church in Ames, St. Cecilia's?
Yes, I spoke with Dan Conradi, the parish historian for St. Cecilia's Church. In the beginning, it wasn't called St. Cecilia's, but the Church of the Good Shepherd. It started in 1889. 35 years after the incorporation of the city of Ames. And it was the first Catholic church here, although there were already other Catholic churches in the surrounding communities. At that time, it was on Lincoln Way, between Oak and Elm Streets, and it was just a one-room church, sitting between 60 and 100 people. In 1906, the name was changed to St. Cecilia's, and the school was added in 1925. By the 1960s, the church was getting crowded, and St. Cecilia's was built on its current site, between Hoover Avenue and 30th Street, in 1972. Originally, the other Catholic church in Ames, St. Thomas Aquinas, was a sort of offshoot of St. Cecilia's, mainly ministering to the student population here in Ames.
Yes, apparently the history of St. Thomas of Aquinas Church in Ames started in the early 40s, when the student population was growing too big for St. Cecilia's. The services for the students started in the Memorial Union, sort of taking the church to the students, as it were. And today, of course, the full name of St. Thomas's is St. Thomas Aquinas Church and Catholic Student Center. But now let's hear what the present priests of St. Cecilia's and St. Thomas's have to say about the Pope's encyclical, Laudato Si, on the care of our common home. In this first segment, we hear Father Jim Secor of St. Cecilia's and Father Don Shader of St. Thomas's both stressing that the encyclical is part of a long tradition. At the beginning, you hear Father Jim Secor speaking.
I think the thing that I would like to most stress about the encyclical is that the encyclical really is a summary statement of many of the statements that the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has made since being elected Pope in March of 2013. Immediately upon his election, he already was sounding themes of evangelization, going to the peripheries, reaching out to the poor, taking care of the earth. There should be no surprises in here for Catholics anyway in terms of what the Holy Father is saying.
That was Father Jim Secora of St. Cecilia's Parish. And now let's hear Father John Shida of St. Thomas Aquinas Parish on the same subject. Here, Father John also emphasizes that the ideas in this encyclical come out of a long tradition of religious thought.
It did not come out of the blue. People think that, well, this is just this pope. The fact is, encyclicals are part of what we call the social teaching of the church, which began in the late 1800s with Pope Leo XIII with an encyclical called Rerum Novarum, emphasizing the dignity of work and justice for workers at a time when workers were very oppressed and with hours and low pay and all that. So encyclicals are sort of the pope's way of applying biblical teaching to modern-day issues. But what I think is important to know is that what Pope Francis is doing is really just an echo and a continuation of what Pope John Paul II did and Pope Benedict XVI. People don't realize Pope Benedict XVI was very strong on a sustainable environment, on taking care of God's creation and things. So this is not simply a one person's opinion thing. It's a really a development of this consistent social teaching of the church, kind of raised to put in more of a spotlight on it. Mm-hmm. But it's consistent with what previous popes have taught through their official teaching.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. When you look at the endnotes of the encyclical,
right.
You can see all the previous encyclicals about this and meetings of bishops from different regions of the world talking about the same things.
Father Jim Sakura and Father John Shida both stress that Pope Francis's concern for the environment, as shown in this encyclical, is part of a long tradition in the Catholic Church. And I believe in the next segment, they are both talking about the significance of the Pope's chosen name, Francis.
Yes, I asked both of them about that. And at the beginning of this next segment, we hear, first of all, the voice of Father John Shader. The encyclical begins with a quotation from St. Francis. And the Pope, sure. Of course, is called Francis.
Yeah.
The first Francis we've had.
Yep.
There's been 23 Johns and 16 Benedicts, but the first Francis.
Yeah.
Do you think that's significant?
It is. When he chose the name Francis, everybody was really kind of stunned because it had never been chosen before.
Which surprised me, actually, that
he
had.
And he's the first Jesuit pope as well. And so a lot of people assumed it was named after St. Francis Xavier, who's a Jesuit missionary. But he made it very clear a day or two later that it was after Francis of Assisi. And so it sort of signaled to us the tone of his papacy, the way he looks at the church and the world is filtered through the eyes of St. Francis of Assisi, who is probably second to only Mary in terms of our most popular saint in the Catholic tradition.
Well, that's why it's surprising that he's the first, because he is so popular, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah, St. Francis of Assisi was very popular, and Pope Francis certainly has sparked something in not only the church but in the world that's really exciting to see.
Right. And the two things I associate with St. Francis mostly, which are very clear with this pope too, is concern for the poor and just concern with all of God's creation and all his creatures.
Right. Those would be two of the main dominant themes of Franciscan spirituality is their charism is direct service and to the poor, and also justice, social justice for the poor, and also caring for creation, that salvation is not just individual human souls popping into heaven, but it encompasses all of creation. And to recover that, St. Francis of Assisi was recovering it in his time, and I think Pope Francis is inviting us to recover that broader sense of salvation, connection with the created world, rather than seeing us as over and apart from creation, that the key word would be stewardship, that we're good stewards of God's creation. It's a gift to God to be used for the common good for all of us and not simply to be exploited for the accumulation of wealth of a few.
Right. That was Father John Shida of St. Thomas Aquinas Parish talking about the significance of the Pope's name, Francis. And this is something that Father Jim Sakura of St. Cecilia's also talked about. And he began by talking about the moment when the new Pope decided that his name would be Francis. It was the time when he heard that he'd been elected as Pope.
I think back to the day of his election, and he himself spoke about this, that when a cardinal in charge of the election came to him and said, well, do you accept your election as Pope? And he said yes. And as he got up from his place to assume the place of leadership, the cardinal sitting next to him, and I forget the cardinal's name now, was somebody from Central America, and he said to him, Jorge, don't forget the poor. Because he had to tell them what name he was going to take. And he said, when his brother cardinal, who was a good friend of his, says, don't forget the poor, he said, I immediately knew that Francis would be the name that I would choose. I think sometimes when it comes to Francis of Assisi, and I've been to Assisi a couple of times, we have a somewhat romanticized view of Francis. We see all those little yard statues, and we think of Francis, you know, there's a lot of those apocryphal stories of speaking to the birds and the Wolf of Gubbio and all of these things. But Francis was very, very radical. And Francis, Pope Francis, is really calling us back to a much earlier Christian view of our relationship with creation, something that St. Francis certainly would have been in tune with. It's much more cosmological, that we have a relationship with the whole of the universe, that we are not just isolated from it, but rather there is this relationship that we have and balance that we need to maintain with all of the of God's creatures. The Holy Father, I know in the encyclical, talks about this in terms of just the reading of the creation account in the book of Genesis, where after the creation of human beings, God says to them, you are to have dominion over the earth. And that sometimes, you know, even in Christian theology in the past, that understanding was that dominion meant domination, or what sometimes was translated subdue the earth, that there was a tension, a war between human beings and creation. And therefore, we had to employ whatever it was to subdue creation. And that in that sense, that creation was there for our taking, our conquering. Whereas a more accurate reading of that, which was an older reading, which Francis of Assisi certainly would have been understanding, was that human beings are the crown of God's creation and are given responsibility to steward that very well. Part of stewarding well is that one uses one's gifts in such a way for the benefit of the whole, whether it's creation, other people. It isn't just a matter of conquering. It's a matter of taking those gifts, those talents, and utilizing it in such a way that creation...
Being responsible.
Yeah, that creation itself comes to even greater goodness fullness and glory. Yes.
Yeah, and in fact, I've got a quote there. Nowadays, we must forcefully reject the notion of our being created in God's image and given dominion over the earth justifies absolute domination over other creatures. And then he says, we are told to till and keep the garden of the world.
Exactly.
In other words, to develop a relationship of mutual responsibility between human beings and nature. This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. I'm Kay Patrick, one of your hosts, together with my co-host, Varad Diwati. We're listening to recorded interviews about the Pope's encyclical on the environment. In that segment, the concept of stewardship as opposed to domination of the environment came up. And Father John and Father Jim both will have more to say about that later in the program. But first, let's hear from an ordinary parishioner. Varad, I believe that Stephen Way, the person speaking in this next segment, is a friend of yours?
Yes, he is a member of the Catholic Church here in Ames and also a student at Iowa State. Let's hear what he has to say.
My name is Stephen Way, and I'm a student at Iowa State studying industrial engineering. I was surprised, well, not entirely, I guess, coming from Pope Francis. He got his name from Francis of Assisi, a saint who was very concerned about nature. That's actually one of my favorite saints, and because he used to call Brother Moon, Brother Sun, and there's a story where he doesn't even want to turn out a fire, because, this might be just a story. He used to tell his monks, no, you're going to hurt the fire. You know, it was to that degree that he thought nature was something that we were, as humans, we have to protect and not destroy. Yes, so he used to preach to birds, he used to preach to rabbits, and they say in the stories that they used to listen to him, you know, because he had this connection, his closeness to God. And so he used to preach to them, and I think that Pope Francis is echoing that. It doesn't come to me as a surprise, yeah. So this is not something uncommon in the Catholic Church for there to be people concerned about it. This is nothing new. Pope Francis, I think, has just seen that we've come to a degree which there's, you know, we have to call attention. Mm-hmm. And many Catholics sometimes can fall, including myself, into just being spiritual in the sense of praying at church, but then it's like who cares about nature? To say I'm not going to recycle, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to take care of the animals that I have, and, you know, think that that might be okay with God. But, you know, Pope Francis is calling us to reconcile ourselves with nature as well, and kind of call our attention that God has commanded us to take care of it and not to destroy it. I would dare say that the encyclical is more than climate change. Mm-hmm. Popes used to mention it from the little bit I know. Popes used to mention it back then. But, you know, an encyclical, having a whole encyclical on that topic is quite unique to Pope Francis. You know, other popes used to maybe give a talk about it, have a paragraph or two on it, but not 40,000 words on the subject. Through prayer, I believe that I've come to realization that I have to take care of nature, not only for myself, but because it's God's will, and also for other people. Because if not, if we don't do this, if we're not conscious about our every action and how we're living and how that affects nature, then this can have big repercussions for us in our age, and especially for our children, you know. I try to do my best about what things I buy and where they come from and how they affect my surroundings, not how they will just benefit me, what's the cheapest. And I think that there's a misconception of what the role of the church is. And the role of the church is not to keep itself bound within the four walls of a temple. Because then what's the purpose if a scientist coming up with a discovery and just keeping it within the boundaries of its laboratory? I mean, it has to share it out with the world. Same thing with spirituality. There's certain things about morality and ethics. Different religions, not only the Catholic Church, have a say in that we can learn from. And even more so with regarding this encyclical of Pope Francis, he doesn't think, oh, I'm the Pope and I'm just going to talk to you and you got to listen to me. He actually acts as a person and tries to relate to you and tries to step down from the position that he has as the head of the Catholic Church and puts himself on the same level as you, and that's how he talks to you. And one of the comments that I read about this encyclical is that he doesn't address the bishop, which is what usually a lot of popes used to do with their encyclicals, or doesn't address all Catholics, but he addresses the people in general more.
I really like what Stephen had to say in that piece, because he sums up in a nutshell a lot of the themes we've already been hearing about from the two priests, Father Jim Sikora and Father John Shader. But now let's hear the rest of what Father Jim has to say about the care of the environment and the Pope's encyclical.
I remember some years ago taking a group of high school students for a summer service trip to the foothills of the Appalachians and witnessing what strip mining had done to the environment. And the companies came in, took the coal out, did nothing to reclaim the landscape. There was these deep scars.
Right.
And then just seeing some of these hillsides where they had been, for the timber, completely, you know, devastated. And then the large gullies that had been carved into these hillsides from the rains, because there was nothing to any longer, you know, hold the soil back, and rendering not only those hillsides, but the land around it, just unusable.
Yes, and the Pope does talk about that and the devastation of the landscape and the beauty was there before and the devastation left behind. And it was quite noticeable to me in the 6 chapters of this encyclical, the Pope keeps returning to this issue of the poor. He doesn't let us just focus on nature in the sense of, you know, the green world, but he emphasizes all the time that humanity is part of nature and we can't take care of the world without taking care of the people on it as well.
Yes, well, he very often speaks about our common home. Now,
right.
Again, this is nothing new to Pope Francis.
Getting back to this idea of caring for the poor, when we think about the global problem of environmental damage, he has this useful concept, which he brings up, of environmental debt.
Yes, that the poor have first right, I guess, on the claims of on the rest of us in terms of being paid for the damage that has been done oftentimes to their environment
right.
through, you know, our, I'll say it, greed, that we sometimes think that, well, creation, the goods of the earth are there for our taking.
Right.
And, you know, without any thought given to the effects of, you know, of what, you know, that taking causes not only to the earth but to other people who have to to live in those environments where the taking has happened. And so the Holy Father is saying that, you know, the poor have this claim on us now to redress an injustice.
Right. And the advances, if you want to use that word, or the progress, the industrialization and so on, that the so-called first world has been made by massing up this huge debt, in fact. We didn't get that. I mean, we treated the environment and nature as if it was there for the taking and it was free, but of course it's not free. And of course, people that live, you know, fishing communities that live on the coasts that are, where the water level is slowly rising, or people that are living as subsistence farmers where there's drought, all these people are the first to suffer at these extreme weather events and so on.
Well, one doesn't have to look any further than the southern part of the United States and the Gulf Coast, the after effects of the BP oil spill.
Right.
It's decimated people in Louisiana, Mississippi, who live along the Gulf Coast, who for generations have made a living fishing oysters and shrimp.
Right.
Those beds have been decimated.
Right. And the Pope has a lot of data on that. I was amazed at the amount he covers. He also talks about the progress that's been made, which is encouraging, but he says we've got, of course, a lot further to go.
This is something to be read and then not put on a shelf, but read, pondered,
right,
meditated on. This is going to be a seminal document that people are going to be going back to 20, 40, 50, 100 years from now as we build on what the Holy Father is calling us to do.
Yes, that struck me. It's a very sort of contemplative, meditative kind of document. It's very poetically written. Yeah, this is a quote, but this is about the coral reefs. Who turned the wonder world of the seas into underwater cemeteries bereft of color and life?
It's beautiful, also, but compelling and challenging.
Right. And it's very outspoken. No, absolutely no holds barred, I thought.
Well, the Holy Father has been known to from his culture. He speaks bluntly. He very forthright in what he has to say.
Here's another quote. These are the Pope's own words. Aside from all doomsday predictions, the present world system is unsustainable. Straight from the shoulder there. And this is a quote from some other document, but this is in the encyclical too. Whatever is fragile, like the environment, is defenseless before the interests of the deified market, which becomes the only rule.
He has some, as you say, blunt things to say in terms of just market forces. But again, that's not unique to him. I think of documents and statements made by Pope Benedict XVI, St. Pope John Paul II, really going back to Pope Leo XIII.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Varad Devde, one of your hosts, together with my co-host Kay Potok. We have been hearing reactions from Catholic clergy and parishioners about Pope Francis's encyclical on the environment. And now, in this next segment, Father John Scheda of St. Thomas Aquinas Church, here in Ames, talks about care and stewardship of the earth and also about exploitation of it.
This idea of stewardship, I think of, for example, my dad was a small farmer in Iowa, and one of the things that impressed me looking back on it was his sense of stewardship. He was very proud that he fed the hungry of the world. That was his passion, his motivation. But he also would often say to my brothers and I that this isn't my land, this is God's land.
Right.
And so I have to take care of it. And so he would put in waterways and do things that maybe financially didn't make sense, but it was out of his sense of being a steward of creation. He doesn't own the land. God owns the land, and I'm simply a caretaker of it. And that's really what Pope Francis is asking us to look at, is more that sense of being stewards, caretakers of God's gift. And also, he connects it with the effects of not taking care of God's creation really disproportionately affect the poor of this world. Being from Argentina, he knows that. You know, he just came back from South America. That's where you see that in a pretty stark way, that the poor people of the world are often exploited. Their countries are exploited for natural resources. And so when, you know, people have said, I can make a lot of money by exploiting natural resources, but it's not given to the poor there. We have a sister parish in Honduras, and you know how the mining companies have gone in and simply ruined the land and taken the resources and walked away, leaving the poor with nothing. That's the type of thing that the Pope Francis is asking us to look at is, from a biblical point of view, you're stewards of creation and you can't exploit it for the profit of a few. It's tied in. It's not simply one issue. It's one of the things that has not been talked about a lot with the encyclical. It's tied in with caring for each other. You cannot be pro God's environment and against God's children. You also can't be, you know, for God's children and be against God's environment. It's really tied in. He's a brilliant mind in terms of tying this all together in terms of how we live together on a common planet.
Right, yes, that was very striking. And he says it's not just one issue, it's three issues that have to be combined to come up with
right.
a solution. There's the social, economic, and ecological problem.
Right.
And we've got to tackle these at once.
You know, one of Pope Francis's favorite words is encounter, that we, instead of getting in like-minded, self-segregated groups of like-minded people, he really is very strong in trying to encounter people in with some humility and with openness and with conviction. He's not looking for a lowest common denominator dialogue. He's looking for people with conviction who can speak to each other and pursue the common good. And so this just makes so much sense to me that it is not just about the environment. It's about our encounter with each other. Yeah. How do we talk to each other? How is our discourse, our public discourse, is it something that brings people together in pursuit of the common good? Or is it just simply people splitting into like-minded groups? He's challenging. Pope Francis, honestly, is challenging to me.
That was Father John Shader talking about the Pope's encyclical. And the encyclical ends with two prayers for our common home, the earth. In this segment, you'll hear the voice of Father Jim Sikora reading one of these prayers. And this reading will be followed by a piece of music, the musical interlude, The Blue-Green Hills of Earth from the Missa Gaia, or Earth Mass, by Paul Winter. Well, this has been a very enjoyable conversation, Father Jim, and if I could, I'd like to ask you to end by reading the prayer with which the Pope ends his encyclical. There's two prayers at the end, one for people who are specifically Christians and the other for more or less anybody. And this is the one I'd like you to read.
This is entitled A Prayer for Our Earth. All-powerful God, you are present in the whole universe and in the smallest of your creatures. You embrace with your tenderness all that exists. Pour out upon us the power of your love, that we may protect life and beauty. Fill us with peace, that we may live as brothers and sisters, harming no one. O God of the poor, help us to rescue the abandoned and forgotten of this earth, so precious in your eyes. Bring healing to our lives, that we may protect the world and not prey on it. That we may sow beauty, not pollution and destruction. Touch our hearts and the hearts of those who look only for gain at the expense of the poor and the earth. Teach us to discover the worth of each thing, to be filled with awe and contemplation, to recognize that we are profoundly united with every creature as we journey towards your infinite light. We thank you for being with us each day. Encourage us, we pray, in our struggle for justice, love, and peace. Amen.
Thank you for that. I've been talking to Father Jim Sikora of St. Cecilia's Church about the Pope's encyclical on the care of our common home. That was just a small piece of The Blue-Green Hills of Earth from the Missa Gaia, or Earth Mass, by Paul Winter, which followed directly from the prayer for the environment that ends the Pope's encyclical on the environment. The prayer was read by Father Sikora of St. Cecilia's Church. And now, to sum up this series of voices expressing their reactions to the encyclical, we'll hear from Sherry Riley of St. Thomas Aquinas Parish. Sherry Riley is the Director of Campus Ministry at St. Thomas's and also the Coordinator of Social Justice. She starts by quoting the opening words of the encyclical, which are themselves a quotation from the Canticle for the Creatures by St. Francis of Assisi.
Praise be to you, my Lord, through our sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us. and who produces the various fruits with colored flowers and herbs. Some of the more important things that he really emphasizes are the connection between all human beings. He really wants people to think of themselves beyond their religious boundaries, and he really makes an effort to seek out authorities beyond Catholic boundaries.
Right.
And clearly, he and whoever helped him write this, because, you know, encyclical writing is a village, and you can see that a lot of research was done before
you
writing
can.
This.
You certainly can.
You know,
yes.
There's a lot of scientific research that's been studied and appropriated before writing this document, and that it's been notated really quite well.
It has, yes. And that was something that surprised me, actually, was how much has been said about this before by different councils of bishops mm-hmm. and so on. And he quotes those a lot.
A lot. Different. Yeah, and not just one or two, but my gosh, you got, you know, the Japanese bishops and the American bishops and the Canadian bishops and the German bishops and the South American bishops. I mean, he went to every bishop's conference and took anything that had ever been written about the environment and really kind of pulled it all together.
Yes, right.
And that, again, points to that whole idea of the common good and the human family being one family, which, you know, can break down racial and ethnic stereotypes and boundaries and really point to the fact that we are one universal people. One other thing I could point to is if people are interested in doing something or, you know, making some kind of commitment to paying more attention to how they interact with the environment and paying more attention to what they do and how that has an impact upon the culture and creation, there's a thing called the St. Francis Pledge that you can look up online. And if you take the St. Francis Pledge, you'll be encouraged to pray and reflect, to learn more about and educate others on climate change, to assess how you and your family, parish, and other people associated with you use creation, and then to act on choices that you make. So, and then even to advocate if you wish.
St. Francis Pledge.
St. Francis Pledge. That's been around for longer than Pope Francis has been Pope, but it's something that the Catholic Church has used to try and really bring parishes to an awareness of care for God's creation and just to try and curb some of the overconsumption, which we're all guilty of. I mean, mm-hmm. we live in the richest country in the world. We all overuse. I mean, I was thinking about my lunch today. I took it to go, and so there was so much packaging that I
right.
threw away.
Right, right.
And could I not have spent that extra 5 minutes preparing my own lunch at home?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to reflect on my St. Francis Pledge.
Yeah.
Pope Francis points out that we really are in a time of change, a time of choice as to how we want to move forward as a human family. We can either ignore what's happening to our own peril, or we can pay attention and do something now. And if we pay attention and do something now, and I don't think he's, you know, gloom and doom. I think he's hopeful. I think
right.
he's spirit-filled and hopeful that we as human beings can not just use technology to solve the problem, but look at one another and make choices that support sustainable living, support sustainable life for every human person.
That's it for Local Talk. We have been your hosts for today, Kay Patak and myself, Varad Devde. Our subject today has been affordable homes and our common home. And you have been just hearing from Sherry Riley, the Director of Campus Ministry and also the Coordinator of Social Justice at St. Thomas Aquinas Church and Student Center here in Ames.
Other guests have been Father Jim Secor of St. Cecilia's Church, Father John Stade of St. Thomas Aquinas, and Stephen Way, a student at Iowa State. At the beginning of the program, we heard from Dan DeGeest of Ames Bicycle Coalition. Dan told us about the organization Bike to Build, which organizes cross-country bike trips focused on helping to build affordable homes with Habitat for Humanity. Music played during the show was from the Missa Gaia, or Earth Mass, by Paul Winter.
Our theme song is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production, training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khyfm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online on our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it.
KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of the shows. Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of local talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.